Welcome back to our Eagle Perspective podcast. I'm joined once again for part two of our discussion with Sean McDowell. Sean, thank you again.
Yeah, great first conversation. Honored to be back.
All right, let's pick it up where we left off. What about from a faith standpoint? What are some defining characteristics that you've noticed about Gen Z? I know there were some studies that you did or that some others have did that I'm wondering if you could share some of those with us.
Sure. I think we're starting to see signs with Gen Z, and I'm curious if it continues with Gen Alpha, of just less awareness of the Christian story as a whole. Now, that's good and bad. It's good in the sense that there's not some of the same baggage and angst and anger against religion that there was like with Gen X and probably with some millennials.
It's not, they don't have a hostile attitude about it.
They don't.
They just don't know.
As a whole, they really don't have a hostile attitude that the new atheists in the early 2000s tapped into, and there were a whole bunch of angry people. Now, there's still people who deconstruct, and they have channels online that are angry with the religion and how they grew up, et cetera. So I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but as a whole for Gen Z, I think that's less. So the flip side is, though, but they don't know some of the narrative that shapes literally our constitution and shapes our music and shapes our history and our identity as an American culture and beyond in the West, shaped by the biblical story. So it's almost like you have these thinkers, people like Tom Holland today, who's an atheist, and people like Jordan Peterson. You have these other people like almost rediscovering this Christian narrative in ways that Christians are like, yeah, we know these stories and our culture doesn't. There's an unfamiliarity with Gen Z. Now, if you ask Gen Z in the studies I've seen, how important is faith to your religion? I don't recall the number, but a majority would say, oh, it's very important to me. But if you ask the question differently, and this is true for millennials as well, tell me what's most important to you. Faith will almost never come up. So religion is important in the religious category of my life. But to how I ground identity, faith is way down on the list from their sexual attractions. Family is up there. Maybe their future profession or interests. Faith is down the list for Gen Zers on who they understand themselves to be and in terms of how they guide themselves in life. So there's a study, I think it was Springtide Institute, maybe 21 or 22, talking about Gen Zers. And I think they said one in five Gen Zers, when they need guidance in life, look to their faith to guide them, if I remember correctly. So they're not hostile to it, but they're largely unaware of it and probably pick up a lot of stereotypes about religion in the media and other places. In fact, a stat I did mention today, I think it was about 50% of Gen Zers, roughly half, have not been to church.
Yeah, even once.
Once in the past 6 months, not once. That's amazing, the level of secularism, I think, in thinking and practice we're seeing develop.
And another way of saying it is it's just not a defining attribute for them. It's not, they don't use their faith to define themselves at all. It's just one of many sort of side choices that a person can make. So all that said, then, what is, as the church or as Christian schools, you know, what are the ways we take this as an opportunity and reach these kids?
Well, first off, I love that you said opportunity, because it is. It's an opportunity, and we have to see it that way. That's one of the points I hammered home today, is like, we've got to view this positively. We get to parent this generation. We get to teach this generation. What a privilege. And none of us would be where we are, whether teacher or parent, if there hadn't been people who had poured into us and cared for us in different ways. So it is an opportunity. If I was going to sum up what I think the research shows, and I mean, I've been studying Pass On the Faith, so many different studies, probably for a couple decades plus. But as far, I mean, you can't, this is not formulaic, because we're not dealing with like bricks making a house. We're dealing with people with free will. But the data shows, if you want to pass on your faith, first thing is you have to model a faith that this generation finds attractive. That's true for a teacher. It's true for a parent. Not perfect, but if you're not living out the kind of life that is attractive, kids are not going to care. It doesn't matter what you say. So first, like, it's interesting in Deuteronomy 6, it's like, love the Lord God with your heart, your soul, and mind, your strength. And then it gives ways to talk with your kids in the Shema about this. But it starts by saying, love God first. We want to fix Gen Z. It's like, no, actually look in the mirror and look at our habits. Look at our character. Look at our life and make sure we are modeling first something that's attractive and authentic.
Yeah.
Second, build relationships with kids.
Well, let's talk
about
that.
Spend time with them.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think as whether it's as parents or as educators who, you know, parents with their own kids, educators who see year after year after year of teenagers, it's easy for us to get a little jaded and start picking at all the things we see wrong and asking kids to change. But what is the value of relationship in this process of passing on faith?
Well, we could look at this a couple ways. Sometimes I ask people who want to be like a speaker. They go, hey, I see you're a speaker. How do I become a speaker? Or a YouTuber or something. I'll ask them this question. I'll say, okay, tell me the YouTube videos or the speeches you've heard that have changed your life. They can't think of a lot. I say, tell me the people that changed your life. Easy. My coach, my teacher, my mom, my uncle. People, we know that intuitively. People change lives. Now, I wouldn't speak and do YouTube if I didn't think it's valuable. But sometimes we assess things that doesn't match up with where real impact comes from. It's people that shape lives. And this research backs this up. The largest study, I mean, I cited this morning that I'm aware of faith transmission is from Vern Bengston. He was a professor. I'm not sure if he still is at USC. And they commissioned a 35-year study, 3,500 people, four generations, parents to great-grandparents, asking what factors are sociologically most salient for faith transmission. They said grandparents are more significant than in the past, and there could be different reasons for that, which is cool. They did say, a lot of people maybe don't want to hear this, but they said negatively, divorce has a significant negative impact on a kid's life. But the number one factor was a, quote, warm relationship with the father. A warm relationship with the father. Number one. God has designed us to be in relationship. I mean, God has spoken through nature. He's spoken through dreams and visions, speaks through conscience, speaks through scripture, prophets. But when God most makes himself known, it's in the person of Jesus who came down incarnationally and relationally. That's why Paul says to Thessalonians and 1 Thessalonians, I not only gave you the gospel, but my very own life. So if you want to influence this generation, you got to model a faith, build relationships with them, spend time and just get to know them. And then third, have spiritual conversations with this generation, not lectures, actual conversations, asking questions, listening over the dinner table, maybe when you're driving in the car, but just at different places, look for conversation as an opportunity. This can happen in the classroom, and I know it's happening here, but some of the best conversations are actually not in the classroom. My son was coming with me yesterday. We were driving, and he was watching this TV show, so I started probing, like, hey, why do you like this TV show? Who's your favorite character? Do you have a favorite episode? Do they talk about faith in the show at all? If you were going to change one character, who would you change? Who do you think I'm closest to? I don't know. I was just coming up with questions to just dialogue with my son and try to get into his mind, have a conversation. And then, you know, a couple of things he said, you know, here's something maybe to think about in the show you hadn't thought about. And he listened because it was in the context of a conversation. So modeling relationships, spiritual conversations is statistically what I think the data show is the best chance we have, of course, through prayer, of seeing our kids adopt our faith.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, gosh, I guess sort of selfishly, I think about what we do here at Santa Fe, and we have this great culture of, actually, it is outside the classroom. I mean, it happens in the classroom, but kids that want to go in at lunchtime and sit with teachers and just kind of shoot the breeze with them. And out of that comes a lot of these conversations.
Love it.
Which is, I think, some of the most valuable part of school is those times of mentorship, you know, sort of casual, almost accidental you know, intentional because it's our structure, but accidental mm-hmm. in that, you know, we don't choose which kids walk into which rooms. It just sort of happens, right? Which is pretty cool. you mentioned having spiritual conversations. I'm thinking about this mostly from a parent standpoint, but it sounds great in theory.
Yep.
It's really hard when your own son or daughter starts asking things or maybe even like presenting ideas or, well, why can't I believe this? Or, you know, I'm playing around with this concept. Like that can be real uncomfortable as a parent because, you know, you might be thinking as a parent, this is exactly where I don't want my son or daughter to land, you know. Mm. But how should we handle that in a way that feels authentic and gives them the space to have the conversation, you know, without also necessarily agreeing with their idea?
So my dad, many of your audience will recognize the name Josh McDowell. He's written 150 or 60 books.
Oh, that's more than 20.
It's a lot more than 20. I gave up a long time ago.
Okay. You might have had your 21st come out while we're sitting here, though. Yeah, I mean, 20 is a lot.
I don't know about that. And culture shifted. That's not maybe the only or primary way to influence, but it's remarkable. He's spoken to millions of young people live. And I forgot the point that I was making. What was your question again?
What do you do when you have a son or daughter?
That's why. Yeah. Got it. So he's written a lot of books on apologetics, defending the faith. In the mid-90s, when I was a student, the internet came out. And I remember I was searching online trying to figure out what is this thing. And I don't know how I came across it, but I came across the Atheist Web, which was largely built at that time on responding to my dad's material chapter by chapter of his book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict. And some of the people who did that are friends of mine now, atheists 25 years later, which is just interesting. But at that time, I'm probably 19 years old, and I'm looking at this. It's the first time I thought, oh my, I've never seen doctors and lawyers, historians mount such a sophisticated case against the Christian faith.
Like there had to have been a part of you that was a little bit of like, am I wrong? You know, are we wrong?
That wasn't a part of me. Yeah. It was more than a part of me. And I felt it. I was like, oh my goodness. I thought someone wasn't Christian. They just hadn't read my dad's book. Like, how hard is it? Here's the evidence. Mm-hmm. These are really smart people. Now, looking back, I find that stuff completely uncompelling now, 30-whatever years later, got a PhD. But at the time, it completely rattled me. And I was like, I've got to talk to my dad about this. So I don't remember. Thanksgiving, Christmas break, we were in Breckenridge, Colorado. And I was like, Dad, can we go get some coffee? He's like, sure. And I just said, as best I can remember, something like, Dad, I want to know what's true, but I'm not sure I'm convinced Christianity is true. And Mike, I kid you not, he looks at me and goes, son, I think that's great. And I was like, did you hear anything that I just said?
Like, you're Josh McDowell, I'm your son.
Exactly.
I mean, like, what's this going to mean for you if your son walks away from the... I mean, he had a lot of reasons to...
He did, and he had no concern about his reputation or how this great apologist would view his son potentially rejecting it. If he did, he certainly didn't express or show any of that. That's for sure. And then he goes, look, you can't believe something just because I believe it. You got to believe it because you think it's true. He said, only walk away from the Christian faith if you're convinced that it's false. Follow after truth. And if you do so, I'm convinced you'll continue to follow after Jesus. And it's something like, your mom and I will love you no matter what. Mm-hmm. I knew that in my mind, but that was like... I just needed that reassurance at that time. And I hate to overdramatize it, but I think there's a sense of like, if your kids are not believing what you want to believe, take a deep breath, play the long game, lean into the relationship, ask them about it, show that you're not threatened by it. Either A, they stay in the faith and just hold some different beliefs than you do. I mean, if the kids, like, if you're like a Calvinist and they're an Arminian, okay, maybe if you're a Calvinist, that's an issue we're dying on. I would say it's not an issue we're dying on. They're still within the faith. They differ over the age of the earth. Okay, important, but like, try to think through how central and important is this and worth dying on or not.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe they do leave the faith for a while. That might happen. If that's the case, don't beat yourself up. It's not your fault. But you want to be a part of that conversation. If the kid leaves, you want that relationship to continue. Mm-hmm. You want to play the long game. And I've seen a lot of people leave at my time and then come back over time. So you want to kind of position yourself to be in relationship with them for a long time and show you're not threatened by this. You love them no matter what. You certainly can express your concern. But my dad told me a while ago, I think it was brilliant. He said, I thought through the different things you kids could potentially say to me and how I would respond. So I have three sisters. If one of my sisters had said, you know, 16-year-old dad, I'm pregnant, how would he respond? He had actually thought that through in his mind.
Wow.
He had thought through, if I said, dad, I'm gay, how would he respond? Or if I was like, dad, I'm dropping out of high school and I'm smoking pot, or I'm whatever, like just whatever scenario, would think it through that didn't fit maybe how he would want us to live our lives, so I can show grace in that moment. So much wisdom in that.
Yeah. So there is, I mean, I'm just going through all the things I need to think about now. It's a little overwhelming, but I love that advice of, you know, have the conversation in your head a little bit first. Mm. So that you're ready for it. I mean, the truth, I think, for all of us with our kids is it's probably not going to be a straight, narrow, clear path the entire way.
There's no probably about it.
Yeah.
So, except maybe my older sister. She was pretty much on the straight, narrow, determined head. That's like the exception. Don't expect that. Yeah. It just doesn't happen. That's okay.
Yeah. What are some other things based on your time both teaching teenagers? You've seen a lot of these students, obviously at Biola as well. You know, other things you've noticed or ways for us to help them, you know, stay in the faith given all that's around them and given the tendencies of their generation.
I would say one of the most important skills to just cultivate is asking good questions. I think a lot about what is a good question? How do I ask good questions? For relationships, it unlocks insights into somebody by asking good questions. I've known my wife in third grade. I met her in Julian. We rode the same bus going way back.
You met your wife in third grade?
I remember her in third grade. Her dad taught at Julian High School. He was one of my teachers for years. We rode the same bus.
When did you know you were going to marry her?
Fourth grade. No, that's not true. That's totally not true. That's a whole nother story. But in college, we started going out when I was in high school all the way through. But I mean, I've known her, I do the math, whatever decades that is, probably about 35 years. And I still think, I'm like, what question can I ask my wife to unlock something new about her? And now I think of like a good question. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that about you. How interesting. So relationally, questions unlock things.
Yeah.
Do you know in the Gospels and Acts, we have recorded 340 questions that Jesus asks. Letters of Paul, there's 266. Hmm. In the entire Bible, there's about 3,000 questions. The God who made our brains largely communicates to us through two means. One, tells stories. Stories, stories, stories. People remember stories.
Yeah.
So I tell a lot of stories to my kids. I share stories with them because they'll remember them. And that's really what shapes our worldview. You want to know what someone believes, look at the people who shape them and the stories that they tell themselves about hard work or success or whatever it is. So stories and questions.
Yeah.
Ask good questions. And the key to that is just be a person who's curious. Not gotcha questions, not yes, no questions. I try to be a really good interviewer, and I think I've gotten better at it. I got an email from a guy, he goes, hey, I've done interviews for years. Stop asking yes, no questions. I was like, dang it, he's right. Shoot, how do I ask better questions? I've got to improve this. He literally took the time to email me that, and he was right. So ask questions with this generation.
Yeah.
Build relationships, be curious, play the long game, model what it really means to be a Christian. And I think, you know, if we're passionate about what we do, I think it rubs off on the next generation. Yeah. So part of modeling is I want my kids to know. So we were sitting at dinner last night, and I don't know, we were just talking about my son wants an e-bike and he wants a PlayStation and he's 12 and we're navigating like, when can you get this and is it dangerous? We're just talking about what he's going to do, which is a lot of time as a family. I said, you know, I just want to share with you guys one highlight from today. I was at church this morning, and I gave a talk on seven evidences that God is back in 2025. I said, you know, a man came up, he sends his kids to a Christian school, and his wife is a Christian, but he's an atheist. And he heard me, he was like, that's really interesting. I've never talked to a pastor after a message. What's your podcast? What are your books? I want to follow up and read this. I was like, kids, it's amazing. Like, he had never heard this before. God could use that in his life to lead him to faith. Isn't that cool? And I really care about that. Like, that's what is important to me. Yeah. So I just share it with my kids, and they see the passion. They remember the story. You know, so share those things with your kids and do it enthusiastically. I mean, you know, the Bible says, love the Lord God with your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. So I would ask people, what do you love? But I love basketball. Sounds like you love basketball. That's great. I love superheroes.
Yeah, favorite.
I actually, Spider-Man, I could come back and tell you why if you want to. I love to exercise. There's certain things I love. And I really hope my kids see that I love Jesus.
Man, listening to you talk, there's so many thoughts that come to mind. But the question, the asking questions in particular, I'm thinking about all the times in the Gospels where someone approaches Jesus with a question.
Yep.
And he responds with another question.
That's right. He does.
So that's a real salient point and takeaway. I do kind of want to hear about Spider-Man.
Sure.
Why is he your favorite?
Two reasons. Number one, Spider-Man's relatable.
Okay.
I mean, how many people really have the anger of Hulk or like the vengeance of Batman? Like, my parents were murdered. I'm vengeance.
Or even the aptitude of Iron Man.
Or like, Iron Man is brilliant.
Yeah, like that. Like,
and he's like a womanizer. Like, I mean, there's some people that maybe, but that's like a 1%.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's like the nerdy teenage kid who gets new powers and he's trying to figure out, like, I can beat Venom, but I can't deliver a pizza. It's like there's something relatable about him.
Yeah.
But second, Stan Lee, who's the creator of
Marvel,
a lot of the Marvel characters, uniquely gave some of the characters different ethics. Like, the ethic of Captain America that he lives by is different than the Wolverine ethic.
Sure.
That's different than Thor.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's ethic is shaped by, Ben Parker said to him, with great power comes great responsibility. Jesus said, he who's given much, much is required.
I love that.
There's something biblical. And honestly, everybody listen to this. You can afford to send your kids to Santa Fe. You live in San Diego. You've been given much. Much is required of us.
Yeah. Amen. Getting back to this idea of having spiritual conversations with your kids, what does that look like?
So, I wrote a book for parents about 5 years ago called So the Next Generation Will Know. When I was researching this, I thought, if I come up with some new plan parents have to do, some of them will do it for a couple weeks, stop doing it, and then feel guilty that they don't do it. It's not really going to help. And then as I was co-writing, I had a shift in thinking. I'm like, wait a minute. What if I help parents, and myself included, I need to do this better, take advantage of the opportunities that are already there and use them more strategically, then you can make a difference. So all of us have opportunities to do this. We just don't always see them. We don't always capitalize on them. So, gosh, I don't know how many, maybe this has been about 5 or 6 years, the movie Bohemian Rhapsody came out. Remember this movie about the rock band Queen?
Yes.
I guess it was 6 years ago because my son is 20 and he was 14. It's PG-13. He was like, Dad, this looks interesting. Can I go? And I was a little bit torn because some of the themes and ideas, but I looked at him like, it's PG-13. His mom was cool with it. I said, okay, I'll take you and a friend and spend $100 on tickets and popcorn. If when we're done, you just tell me what you thought about the movie. I want to know what you saw, what you learned, and can we just talk about it? But he goes, sure. So I took him and a friend to a movie. We came back and then we just sat down at the dinner table, probably 20 or 30 minutes. And I said, hey, you want to see the movie? What'd you think? What surprised you? Did you enjoy the movie? What was your favorite scene? Then I said, is there anything as Christians we look at in this film and we can say, you know what? We can celebrate that. We agree with that. Then I said, were there any times in this movie you felt like you were being preached at? Were there any ideas in this movie that we as Christians should say, you know what? I'm not sure I'm on board with that. And we just talked about it. So the opportunity was there, seized it, it worked out. So with my, not all kids will do that.
Yeah.
My daughter, a little bit differently, is I'm actually doing this with my 12-year-old son now, is she wanted to make money for these Birkenstock shoes. And they're like, I don't know, they're over $100, $150.
Yeah. Just as an aside, I cannot believe Birkenstocks are in style right now amongst
teenagers. Oh my goodness.
Like I made fun of my dad.
It is funny about, it's like Crocs coming back.
Oh, my dad wore socks and Birkenstocks around the house and I just made fun
Isn't
of how not cool
funny?
He was. And now he's right. I can't, it's hard for me to live with it.
It anyway. Comes in cycles.
Yeah,
it so does. She just wanted these Birkenstocks and they're expensive shoes. And so I had this idea spurred on by a friend. I said, okay, so if you watch each PragerU, Dennis Prager, this Jewish talk show host, has great Bible commentaries, has these short videos that are 5 minutes long, biblical issues, cultural issues, political issues. I said, all right, if you watch one of these, just write a summary of it and your thoughts. Each one you do, I'll give you $5, but you have to talk to me about it. Now, my son would not do that. He's like, I'm not doing it. But my daughter did. She had like 20 of them.
Wow.
Made enough money. Yeah. We went and got the Birkenstocks.
Mm-hmm.
That worked for her. My daughter also, when I wrote a book called Chasing Love. And actually, to answer your question, that is probably one of my favorite books.
Ah, okay, we got there. All right.
I do love that book, somewhat pun intended. But so that book, I thought, you know what? I really want my daughter to read this. So at the time, I think she was maybe 13. And I said, tell you what, I'm writing this book for teenagers. If you'll just read it and give me your feedback, I'll take you to get whatever pair of shoes, it was shoes again, that you want. I can't remember. I gave her an amount. And she goes, well, Dad, I could get 2 or 3 pair at the mall for that amount. I'm like, that's totally fine. You get this budget. So she read it. And then we went out to coffee and we talked for an hour, hour and a half. And I just said, hey, what'd you think? Did it surprise you knowing your dad things that I said? Is there anything you thought was wrong? What was most interesting to you? What did you learn? And we just talked about it for an hour and a half. Then I went and bought her some shoes. So I think if we just kind of open our eyes and shift our thinking, there are opportunities to talk with kids about faith. One more practical example. This is not for me. This is from a friend of mine, Natasha Crane, who if you haven't had her here, you would love her here at San Fe. She has a number of wonderful books, especially on passing on the faith really well. And she'd play a game with her kids called Spot the Lie. They just watch Hollywood movies together and she'd say, Spot the Lie. And she's, wait a minute, they're saying this about marriage. Yeah, that's a lie. Wait a minute, they said this about whatever the issue is. And it just teaches them to think a certain way. Those are the kinds of practical. So some conversations can be 90 minutes with my daughter before buy shoes because she read a book. The others are like 90 seconds here because you spot the lie and then you move on.
Yeah.
All of that are the kinds of spiritual conversations you can have.
I love that. It's a sneaky way too of getting them to see what's being presented to them and what assumptions are in it.
Yeah.
And, I just started maybe a version of this. So my kids are 9 and 6 and my 9-year-old is, you know, listening to songs. They're all, I mean, we're pretty careful about what we let her listen to, but there are meanings in them. So
there
I've
are.
Actually just started, like, she's singing along and I've just started asking her, hey, what's this song about? You know? And it's, I feel like it's a good exercise of making her even describe what she's singing about.
For sure.
And I can see the next level of that is going to be, you know, so what do we think about that? So that's a good tip that I think I'm building on. So
good
thank
for you.
You.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
All right. What else? You want me to do a closing and then a middle? Okay. Well, I know we could probably keep doing this for hours. We are so grateful for your time. Sean, thank you so much, not just for this, but for coming to our community for a couple days and spending so much time with us. We couldn't be more grateful.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. It brings back a lot of memories, and there's a lot of relationships here that go deep. And I'm thrilled. I believe in Christian education. Taught there 21 years. Have sent all my kids to kind of a Santa Fe Christian type school about an hour north. So happy to help. Honored to be here. This has been fun. If your position here at a Christian school doesn't work out, man, you nailed it in this interview. You kept the conversation going. Good questions. I just noticed Santa Fe Christian TV. My goodness,
you
act
know,
like
I mean,
a rookie.
I
got
I like
a T-shirt.
I like this is our man. Star student TV group. They're actually awesome.
It looks legit.
Love to. They are legit. So
I'm impressed.
They do a good job. And no, I appreciate your kind words. And I will say, I'm excited about book 21 coming out. Thank you for being a good sport. Here from the author of of zero books.
You're welcome.
So really appreciate it. Thank you to those of you watching and listening. If this is your first time seeing one of our podcasts, you can catch other episodes of our Eagle Perspective podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or elsewhere podcasts are available. You can see our video podcasts on YouTube. We look forward to seeing you again soon.